Before we begin, please be aware that this episode discusses topics related to stress and anxiety. If these subjects are sensitive to you, please take care whilst listening and pause if you need to.
I'm Dr. Jonathan Foster, so I'm a senior lecturer in the Department of Chemistry at the University of Sheffield, and I'm also, for my sins, the PGR lead for Mathematical and Physical Sciences. A bit of my own background, so I've been a PI now, I guess, for about 10 years, and I've had quite a lot of PhD students, very many master's students and things come through my own group. I've also spent the last five sort of years as PGR lead and really trying to build and share good practice around the department for how we get new PhD students up and running safely in the labs. And I'm also conscious, perhaps for any GTAs or PhD students listening, there's a lot of the work goes on with master students in research labs is done by PhD students and by master students. So how do we create a supportive and inclusive chemistry research environment for those students? So first of all, I'd like to get you thinking about what the difference between a teaching lab and a research lab is. So a teaching lab, I guess I'm imagining lots of students basically all doing the same sorts of experiments in the first few years, perhaps for a chemistry undergraduate degree. Believe it or not, given you have 60 people all doing the same experiment and it all comes out a slightly different shade of green, these are very tried and tested experiments that have been done for many years very often, and generally we know they work. In contrast, research labs, the whole point of research is trying to do new things and trying to discover new things that haven't been done before. And the reality of that is the vast majority of things don't work, including things that have been published in the literature previously and handed to students to kind of reproduce. It is quite a different sort of thing to have to get used to, and that can be a real shock to students when they kind of get there. So again, the sort of environment is very different from being in a large undergraduate lab, perhaps with lots of people all doing these same experiments at the same time, perhaps with a supervisor and several GTAs or demonstrators to support people. In a research environment, it's much more individual. Everyone is doing a different project. Everyone's in a different research lab. The project, two people on basically the same project, but perhaps making slightly different variations of it, those can go totally, totally differently. And, the PhD students, the supervisors that students are working with, mostly it's on a one-to-one, maybe one to a couple of people sort of ratio. And that's very different as well. So I think Frane's talks reminded me that the diverse range of backgrounds that undergraduate students come from, but particularly for new PhD students and also master students, we do often take students from incredibly diverse backgrounds, and we often assume that basically they've come through our own undergraduate programs, and that's very often not the case. And this means students are often starting not only with different scientific expertise, but also different experiences of lab culture and different like work ethics and sort of, expectation, cultural expectations of what norms are and what research labs look like. And making sure we're meeting students where they are is really important. I guess the other thing that's really different between teaching labs and research labs is teaching labs are really about training you in sets of skills, and ultimately we often don't really care about the outcome of that reaction. The compound that everyone spent ages making, 2 or 3 days making, and it ends up disposed of in an appropriate manner according to its hazards. In contrast, in research labs, the PhD students and the postdocs and the academic supervising students are very invested in the outcome. So noting that most things don't work most of the time, this can create an extra set of sort of frictions and challenges, because this is perhaps something contributing to someone else's PhD, or, you know, it's important for people's careers and long-term things that stuff eventually works, but recognizing most stuff doesn't work first time. So how do we help transition students from these teaching labs that they've hopefully become familiar with to this new research lab environment? So I guess the first thing is really about managing expectations, and students often are used to experiments working because that's what they've done with undergraduate labs. And, you know, good students often who've gone on to do PhDs or master's courses, you know, they are successful most of the time. And so getting people used to failure and used to expecting stuff not to work, and for them to have to solve problems and really for that being part of the process, is something that's really important. So making that really clear from the start and not going, oh, this will be really easy, because the reality is it never is. Your nice straight plan, the path to the goal that the supervisor writes down as for this is how this project's going to go, it never is. So we're setting people up to fail if we kind of pretend otherwise. So I think another thing that's really important is that we've got to remember that whilst we do care about the outcomes, and that has many positives for the student in terms of the sort of time that we'll invest in them on a one-to-one basis, it is really not about the outcome for the student, certainly a master's student. It is about developing them. And we've got to take them from wherever they are and move them onto the next stage, whatever that might be for them. And very often that means it would be easier to do it ourselves. And in some cases that's necessary. And again, you know, some very complicated analysis or some very expensive equipment, you know, it may be that basically someone has to demonstrate it for them. But the point of the experience for master students and for new PhD students is for them to grow as researchers. And so, you know, initially there will be a lot of training and a lot of support required, but if they still need all that at the end, then we've not done our jobs, and we're failing in developing them as researchers. I think the other thing in terms of managing expectations, and again, I'm particularly thinking here about, you know, PhD students looking after a master's student. And I've seen it too many times where, you know, you get this new student and the responsibility that particularly PhD students can feel for supporting that student and getting them through their degree can be quite overwhelming and stressful for them. I guess thinking about anxiety and how we can reduce anxiety. For me, what I think must be one of the biggest sources of anxiety is all the unwritten rules. I think once you've worked in a research environment for quite a long time, you forget all the things. And when Franny was talking earlier about hazard labels, you know, I don't even think when I see a hazard label as to what it means. It's just intuitive now, whereas I can remember back to kind of looking at these things and thinking, oh goodness me, look, that sounds like skull and crossbones, you know, this doesn't feel like an unsafe environment. So I think making sure that we articulate what all the unwritten rules are. And some of those are laboratory safety. And again, the rules of research labs often are quite different from undergraduate labs in terms of the norms and how practices are actually taken place. So for example, disposable gloves rather than reusable ones is common practice in research, but not often in undergraduate labs. What we have in our group is kind of various sort of like a lab handbook and an induction document where we've gone away and we've written down all of those sort of rules, all the sort of processes, both the lab safety ones, but also things like, well, how do I like to work? So I'm somebody who likes email. I'm somebody who uses, so we have Google, use Google Calendar a lot, and just explaining, you know, this is how I like things done. This is how I like to work. And whilst I and recognizing that they might like to work in other ways, and it's not about imposing my own systems entirely on them, but it is about going, okay, well, this is a useful starting point. Here's my expectations for how things might work, and we can adapt as we go along. But at least having explained that, hopefully it can help. So as a tip, if you're a supervisor, I think this is a great thing to do. It can really help get students started quickly and have those conversations where there are big cultural differences, show them what reasonable looks like. If you're a PhD student or something, you know, I think this is something to ask for and encourage. And you're probably better placed actually to write many of the things, because you know, you'll be closer to what you didn't know when you started, and you'll know what the actual practices are, and can kind of pass on that wisdom to new people starting in the group. So another big challenge, I think, with research is that most things don't work. Whatever plan you start off with goes out of the window very quickly. And I guess now I'm thinking perhaps particularly about PhD students, where it's a long-term set of goals. And when you start a PhD, there will be some big picture aim of what it was that originally got you the funding in the place. So, you know, curing cancer, or, you know, solving world peace, something big and noble and ambitious. The reality of which may be that's never achieved, at least during your PhD. So these are the kind of intrinsic motivators. This is the things that kind of probably are the reason we chose that particular project, the things that we wanted to go. And they're really important in terms of kind of making the work that we're doing feel meaningful for the long term. The reality is you might never get there. And so what you've got to do is break that big overall objective down, aim down into some meaningful objectives, some concrete scientific steps, which are, you know, hypotheses we can test and prove whether or not they're true. That allows us to kind of, you know, plan out, instead of just, you know, line one, cure cancer, to be, okay, right, well, first of all, I'm going to need to make this molecule, or I'm going to need to test this. Those are really important for kind of, you know, coming up with sort of medium term strategies of where you're going to go, the steps that you've got to go through. But on a day-to-day basis, they're still too big picture. And we've got to break those scientific objectives down even further into specific tasks. So tangible things that you can definitely do, and use those to kind of plan out our week and assess our productivity against, basically. So that might be not make compound X because but do a specific reaction according to a particular paper, and, you know, run an NMR, run a column, run whatever it is, each individual step of that process, because it may, at the end of it, your NMR may or may not show that you've made what you thought you wanted to make. But that doesn't mean that you haven't made progress, because you have still completed a series of tasks. But it does mean that you're going to have to reassess and re-come up with another way of meeting that objective. I would just highlight that one of the traps that some people do fall into is basically they get a series of tasks that they feel very comfortable doing. And so what they do is just keep turning the handle on those few set of tasks. And they can be incredibly productive and produce an awful lot of stuff. But actually, what you've also got to remember is it meeting, you know, is it, are we making progress towards the overall objectives and towards the overall aims? So I really recommend students plan their weeks around tasks, but every so often step back and go, okay, well, you know, am I meeting my objectives? Am I figuring out, you know, am I getting towards my broader goals and the original aims of the project? Because if you're not, you probably need to reevaluate. So, yeah, separating out day-to-day planning in terms of tasks, but then longer term planning in terms of aims and objectives. So another thing that I think is really important is feedback. I think one of the most unsettling things about the research environment is the fact that, students come from, you know, having done a class where everybody has done all the same experiments, and the basic metric for how well you're doing seems to be how quickly you can leave, which I don't think is the best metric, but at least you've got something to compare yourself to others for. Whereas at least in research, every project is different, every person is different, every supervisor is different, and it is really very difficult to gauge how you are doing if you've never been in this environment before and you've never done it. So I think feedback is really key and often not something that's done so well. You do get a lot of feedback in a research environment, but mostly it's negative. It's where you've made mistakes or done things wrong, or particularly for written work, you know, it comes back covered in ink and all the things that are wrong. So I think when we are giving feedback to students, it's important to really just remember that. And most the correction that they need is negative and corrective. So that's not to say that we shouldn't point those things out, but making sure that we're phrasing it in terms of, you know, pointing out the good things that they have done, where they are going right, and reinforcing that and making it constructive and positive feedback is really important. I think there's also a good question between written and verbal feedback. So I think sort of timely feedback at the time and in the moment, just casually and verbally is really important to kind of keep things ticking over. But I think also students often don't necessarily take on verbal feedback in the way that certainly I think I'm communicating things to them. And I think there is a place for some formal feedback. So within our systems, for instance, we have for master students, halfway through their projects, we kind of give them some written feedback, and try and do the same for PhD students. And I think seeing things in black and white can often be quite helpful if what you think you've said isn't actually what the student thinks that they've said. But the danger with written feedback is it comes then without that kind of context and sort of in the delivery. And so, you know, I think a combination of the two is really important. We can't always be writing detailed written feedback, but a combination of the two, I think, is important and helpful. So another thing I think that often falls on either PhD student supervising, or I think really academic supervising, is that there is a lot going on in students' lives. And often, you know, they turn to the people around them for help, quite rightly. And, you know, we need to create that inclusive environment where people feel able to talk and be able to speak out. And I think that's really important thing to foster. But I think it's also really important that GTAs know, and that PIs know, that they're not therapists, they're not trained therapists, and that isn't their job and that isn't their role. Because again, I've seen it too many times where, you know, students go to incredible lengths to support other students, and you know, in one sense it's absolutely fantastic, but it's also can be a massive burden for them, and they feel like it's their responsibility, and you know, that isn't what expected of students for supervising. So I think what is helpful to communicate is that they do have a responsibility in terms of signposting people to other services. So maybe that's the health service or wellbeing or welfare facilities within groups, and you know, offering support. And that, you know, absolutely great if you're able to listen. You might be able to share some experiences of your own, advice if it's relevant. But I think it's really important to set boundaries and manage expectations, because you know, there is a massive load there. And so for you know, PhD students or something, you know, if it's becoming an issue, you know, talk with your supervisor. You don't need to share what they've said, but let them know that you also need some support, and let's help that get the student the support they need, rather than feeling that it's support that we have to offer all by ourselves, because that's not That's not the role.